5.5 hours from Saul, he dropped out again. The puppeteer's coordinates defined a small rectangular section of the sky as seen from Saul, plus a radial distance in that direction. At that distance, those coordinates defined a cube half a light year on a side. Somewhere in that volume, presumably, was a fleet of ships. Also in that volume, unless instruments had fouled him up, were Louis Wu and the Longshot. Somewhere far behind him was a bubble of stars, some 70 light years in diameter. Known space was small and very far away. No point in searching for the fleet. Louis wouldn't know what to look for. He went to wake Nessus. Anchored by his teeth to an exercise rung, Nessus peered over Louis's shoulder.
I need certain stars for reference. Center that green-white giant and throw it on the scope screen.
The pilot's cabin was crowded. Louis hunched over the instrument panel, protecting buttons from the puppeteer's careless hooves.
Spectroanalysis, yes. Now, the blue and yellow double at 2 o'clock.
I have my bearings. Swing to 348.72.
What exactly am I looking for, Nessus? A cluster of fusion flames? No, you'd be using thrusters.
You must use the scope. When you see it, you will know.
On the scope screen was a sprinkling of anonymous stars. Louis ran the magnification up until... 5 dots in a regular pentagon, right?
That is our destination.
Good. Let me check the distance. Tange, that's wrong, Nessus. They're too far away. No comment. Well, they couldn't be ships, even if the distance meter isn't working. The puppeteer fleet must be moving at just under light speed. We'd see the motion. 5 dull stars in a regular pentagon. They were a fifth of a light year distant and quite invisible to the naked eye. At present scope magnification, they would have to be full-sized planets. In the scope screen, one was faintly less blue, faintly dimmer than the others. A Keplerer rosette. How very odd. Take 3 or more equal masses, set them at the points of an equilateral polygon, and give them equal angular velocities about their center of mass. Then the figure has stable equilibrium. The orbits of the masses may be circular or elliptical. Another mass may occupy the center of mass of the figure, or the center of mass may be empty. It doesn't matter. The figure is stable, like a pair of Trojan points. The difficulty is that there are several easy ways in which a mass can be captured by a Trojan point. Consider the Trojan asteroids in Jupiter's orbit. But there is no easy way for 5 masses to fall accidentally into a Keplerer rosette.
That's wild, Louis murmured. Unique. Nobody's ever found a Keplerer rosette.
He let it trail off. Here between the stars, what could be lighting those objects?
Oh, no you don't, said Louis Wu. You'll never make me believe it. What kind of an idiot do you take me for?
What is it that you will not believe?
You know Tange well what I won't believe.
As you please. That is our destination, Louis. If you take us within range, a ship will be sent to match our velocity.
The rendezvous ship was a No. 3 hull, a cylinder with round ends and a flattened belly, painted shocking pink and windowless. There were no engine apertures. The engines must be reactionless, thrusters of the human type or something more advanced. On Nessus's orders, Louis had let the other ship do the maneuvering. The Longshot, on fusion drives alone, would have required months to match velocities with the puppeteer fleet. The puppeteer ship had done it in less than an hour, blinking into existence alongside the Longshot with her access tube already reaching like a glass snake toward the Longshot's airlock. Disembarking would be a problem. There wasn't room to release all the crew from stasis at once. More important, this would be Speaker's last chance to take control of the ship.
Do you think he will obey my task, Louis?
No, I think he'll risk one more shot at stealing the ship. Tell you what we'd better do.
They disconnected the instrument panel from the Longshot's fusion motors. It was nothing that the Kazin couldn't fix, given a little time and a touch of the mechanical intuition possessed by any toolmaker. But he would not have the time. Louis watched the puppeteer move through the tube. Nessus was carrying Speaker's pressure suit. His eyes were tightly closed, which was a pity because the view was magnificent.
Free fall, said Tila when he opened her crash couch. I don't feel so good. Better guide me, Louis.
What's happening? Are we there?
Louis told her a few details while he guided her to the airlock. She listened, but Louis guessed she was concentrating on the pit of her stomach. She looked acutely uncomfortable.
There'll be gravity on the other ship, he told her.
Her eyes found the tiny rosette where Louis pointed. It was a naked eye object now, a pentagon of five white stars. She turned with astounded questions in her eyes. The motion spun her semicircular canals, and Louis saw her expression change in the moment before she bolted into the airlock. Kemplerer rosettes were one thing. Freefall sickness was something else again. Louis watched her recede against the unfamiliar stars.
As the couch cover opened, Louis said, "Don't do anything startling. I'm armed."
The Kazin's orange face did not change expression.
"Have we arrived?"
"Yeah, I've disconnected the fusion drive. You'd never reconnect it in time. We're in the sights of a pair of big ruby lasers."
"Suppose I were to escape in hyperdrive?" "No, my mistake. We must be within a singularity."
"You're in for a shock. We're in five singularities."
"Five? Really? But you lied about the lasers, Louis. Be ashamed."
At any rate, the Kazin left his couch peaceably enough. Louis followed with the variable sword at the ready. In the airlock, the Kazin stopped, suddenly caught by the sight of an expanding pentagon of stars. He could hardly have had a better view. The long shot, edging close in hyperdrive, had stopped half a light hour ahead of the puppeteer fleet, something less than the average distance between Earth and Jupiter. But the fleet was moving at terrible speed, falling just behind its own light, so that the light which reached the long shot came from much further away. When the long shot stopped, the rosette had been too small to see. It had been barely visible when Teela left the lock. Now it was impressively large and growing at enormous speed.
Five pale blue dots in a pentagon, spreading across the sky, growing, spreading.
For a flashing instant, there were five worlds around the long shot. Then they were gone, not fading, but gone. Their receding light reddened to invisibility. And Speaker to Animals held the variable sword.
"Finnegal's eyes!" Louis exploded. "Don't you have any curiosity at all?"
The Kazin considered.
"I have curiosity, but my pride is much stronger."
He retracted the wire blade and handed the variable sword back to Louis.
"A threat is a challenge. Shall we go?"
The puppeteer ship was a robot. Beyond the airlock, the life system was all one big room. Four crash couches, as varied in design as their intended occupants, faced each other in a circle around a refreshment console. There were no windows. There was gravity, to Louis's relief, but it was not quite Earth's gravity, nor was the air quite Earth's air. The pressure was a touch too high. There were smells, not unpleasant, but odd. Louis smelled ozone, hydrocarbons, puppeteer, dozens of puppeteers, and other smells he never expected to identify. There were no corners. The curved wall merged into floor and ceiling. The couches and the refreshment console all looked half-melted. In the puppeteer world, there would be nothing hard or sharp, nothing that could draw blood or raise a bruise. Nessus sprawled bonelessly in his couch. He looked ridiculously, ludicrously comfortable.
"He won't talk," Teela laughed.
"Of course not," said the puppeteer. "I would only have had to start over when you arrived. Doubtless you have been wondering about..."
"Flying worlds," the Kazin interrupted.
"And Kemplerer rosettes," said Louis.
A barely audible hum told him that the ship was moving. He and Speaker stowed their luggage and joined the others in the couches. Teela handed Louis a red fruity drink and a squeeze bulb.
"How much time have we got?" he asked the puppeteer.
"An hour until we land. Then you will be briefed on our final destination."
"That should be long enough. Okay, speak to us. Why flying worlds? Somehow it doesn't seem safe to throw habitable worlds about with such gay abandon."
"Oh, but it is, Louis."
The puppeteer was terribly earnest.
"Much safer than this craft, for instance. And this craft is very safe compared to most human-designed craft. We have had much practice in the moving of worlds."
"Practice? How did that happen?"
"To explain this, I must speak of heat and of population control. You will not be embarrassed or offended?" They signified negative. Louis had the grace not to laugh. Teela laughed.